Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are back live into hour number two. Dr. Tarp Lee, the brain bug, will be joining us coming up here in just a few minutes. With his incredible expertise breaking down what's happening in Libya and the peaceful ground war, the peaceful air bombardment as we enter 1984. I'm going to cover this more coming up in the third hour today because it's so important and I'm going to take your calls on it. But finishing up this segment, cops use mobile scanner to steal cell phone data from innocent Americans. An incredible article that we've got to get out to everyone. And I'm thinking about a Google bomb term here. How about cop steal cell phone? Yeah, let's make that the number one search term today so they go to Infowars.com and then read about this. Cops steal cell phone. Cops steal cell phone. Cops steal cell phone. Three words. Let's hit them. Let's hit them hard. COPS steal, STEAL, cell phone. Cops steal cell phone. And it's so incredible isn't the word. There is not words that I've known for a long time. They've got wireless hubs, including my sources in the Austin Police Department. They've got, through the local federal threat fusion center, this has actually been in the paper, this part, hundreds and hundreds of microphones all over the city that are shotgun mics, listening to your street conversations with keyword analysis that then flags it. They record for a week or so and then dump the data, we're told. And that started going in 98 under a federal grant. It's all over the country. I remember a story about the Forest Service putting it up in the middle of nowhere. They've got laser couplers that they drive around in these big trucks, aim them at your windows. You can't even see the laser. And then it picks up the audio bouncing off the window like a eardrum membrane. They also have these cell phone grabbers. And they can also just dial right into your cell phone conversations. No warrants. And the cops feel special being part of the special units. They get a lot more money. And last time I checked, Austin has six or seven of these big trucks. They've got some of them disguised, some of them not. And they've got the big federal command center with all these toys. And they've got license plate readers up. This is where I live. Face scanners up. And it's all very orderly. And the narcotics are shipped in. It's all very fun. And they hope they find you using them. And even if they don't catch you using them in places like Dallas and Houston, they admit they just frame everybody in masks. It's all come out in the news. Dallas police just pull you over, throw a bag of chalk in your car, take your luxury vehicle. Or they go to your house, throw it, and take it. And it's all admitted. Nobody gets in trouble. The same thing in Seattle. It's come out. Cops go in and sell to another cop drugs in the bathroom, then take your bar or restaurant. And then it's turned out in many areas of Seattle, more than half the bars are owned by cops. Oh, it's so good to have a public just ready to be total slaves. They love it. And then the good cops, well, they stay, even when they're 55 years old, as beat cops writing tickets and going to domestic disturbances. But all the cops that know how to play ball, man, I've seen Austin cops that beat up people in wheelchairs in cases we've covered, and then they get promoted right to commander. I mean, it's over. I mean, it's over. It's over. And the SWAT team guys can flip cars and wreck and nothing happens when they're drunk. And other cops can run off the road drunk on their motorcycles and kill themselves and they go arrest the bar owner. Just where I live, it's so much fun. But again, it's impossible for police to ever go bad. It never happened in any other country. Well, it's happened here. And the system is corrupt. The system is evil. We got the documents 2 years ago from law enforcement who are good. True peace officers that... Hey, the number one target is returning veterans, gun owners, conservatives, libertarians. So you see the old gray-haired cops out there with their radar guns all day. You see the young, crazy-eyed, gremlin-looking, shaved-head cops with the devil tattoos. They're commanders. Oh, Dim, it's you from Clockwork Orange. And he goes, it's Officer Dimowski here. No more Dim. I got power now. We'll be right back.
Over the last year, Alex has told you about, and many of you have experienced emergencies and disasters in unprecedented numbers. People have had to literally run for their lives. Folks, this is Steve Shank with eFoods Direct. I'm not here to scare you, but when disaster strikes, you won't have time to think. You must act automatically. What does a pilot do when the helicopter engine fails in flight? No time to think, just act automatically. When the alert is broadcast, the alarm sounds, or the knock comes on your door, you'll need to be ready to act without thinking of what to do or what you need. You need a 5-day extreme emergency kit. With serious supplies and real food to secure 2 adults for 5 days, this powerful $300 extreme emergency kit is free with an order of at least $995 from eFoods Direct. Go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex or call 800-409-5633. That's eFoodsDirect.com/Alex, 800-409-5633.
They helped to create a new world order.
We are part of a new world order.
A new world order based upon collective action.
Invisible Empire is a damning indictment of the globalists through their own words and documents.
The new world order really is a tool for addressing a new world of possibilities.
It means all the world under their control.
The United Nations would take over America. The Trilateral Commission would control the world.
Invisible Empire chronicles how men of power and influence have worked in stealth for centuries to establish an oppressive world government.
I believe, first of all, that we now need nothing short of a world constitution for the global financial system.
Global governance with the establishment of the G20.
So it's going to be an inner ruling elite and then everyone else. And I got news for you. You're everyone else.
Invisible Empire. Secure your copy today at Infowars.com or PrisonPlanet.com, or watch it online in the highest quality at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Most of us eat a blend of processed, man-made, and all-natural food. But the food you eat may not provide all the nutrition your body needs. We now know that liquid vitamin supplements are absorbed faster than pills. That's why you need C-Energy. From AffinityCEnergy.com, sea vegetation is known to be the richest source of organic minerals, and that's what you'll find in all-natural, great-tasting Sea Energy. Sea Energy contains aloe vera, black cherry, cranberry, and pomegranate juices, plus ginseng, cat's claw, ginger, ginkgo biloba, and over 50 trace minerals needed for healthy metabolism, all from natural organic sea plant sources. Get a 10% discount by using promo code GCN at checkout when you order Sea Energy from AffinityCEnergy.com. Call 855-732-3637. That's 855-732-3637. Or go to AffinitySeaEnergy.com today.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
By the way, Dr. Jerome Corsi's got a book coming out on Obama. And he's gone all over the world. Indonesia, Kenya, you name it, and they've expunged the records. The one school record we got does confirm he changed his name to Barry Sotero, did give up his U.S. citizenship. Well, that's all over the news today, but I just want to point out that Webster Tarpling, we carry both of his books, by the way, reported this years ago and in total detail, the full spectrum with Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. And it is the preeminent work available at Infowars.com and deserves to be seen by everyone. It is, of course, a big report at Drudge Report today. Book to reveal Obama's true identity, and I'm sure it's going to be powerful, by Jerome Corsi. And it goes through the fact that all over the world they're hiding who he really is and that they've found some groundbreaking information. And remember, this is the guy that basically swift-boated Kerry. So you know, they do dig out some pretty powerful information. But in the case of what's going on with Barry Sotero, a.k.a. Barack Obama, there is no doubt he's CIA. And that's the issue that's getting the death threats from very credible sources delivered to Wayne Madsen. So I also want to briefly talk about that with Webster Griffin Tarpley. But here's the headline: missing records in Hawaii, missing records in Kenya, missing records in Indonesia. And I want to post Drudge's article with a link to Drudge at Infowars.com, part of his article. Did we do that yet? I want to make sure one of the web people gets that done right now. You did do it? Okay, awesome. It's up there at Infowars.com. Lord Monckton's coming up in about 30 minutes. Steve Watts is coming up at the end of the third hour. But going to Webster Griffin Tarpley, it was Tarpley several months ago when the Libyan Rebellion began that wrote the articles at Tarpley.net. We posted them at Infowars.com that broke down how the State Department was publicly funding these al-Qaeda groups. Even the L.A. Times 2 days ago admitted NATO, al-Qaeda, Taliban behind uprising. They're now Orwellian terms saying it's peaceful bombs they're dropping. It's humanitarian. They're actually saying the ground troops are going to be humanitarian force with weapons who are going to go out and enter the cities Gaddafi's in. And if he fights back, then they're going to have to bring in a larger ground force. So we've actually entered 1984, and there's a lot of mainstream news articles now admitting that the full ground invasion is on, with the UN ordering the United States to contribute troops, the Marine Corps ships that are already there, more getting into place. So Webster Tarpley, a huge development. Over a month ago, you said the Saudis are being double-crossed. The globalists are devaluing the dollar. This is a system to overthrow the entire Middle East. Now the Saudis, as you said months ago, I said this last year, are running to the Russians, running to the Chinese. I mean, it's incredible, Dr. Tarpley of history and also an economist, that you broke all this down. Now it's all evident there. What does this signify? And there's also some mainstream articles today that the Arab Spring is not going completely well for the globalists.
Precisely. The basic idea is that you had all of these countries, be it Libya, be it Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and lots of countries in the empire that were trying to get out from under this suffocating U.S., British, IMF domination. And in order to do that, they were playing the Russian card, the China card, the Iranian card, or trying to build themselves up.
The BRICS card.
BRICS is not quite going to do it, because it's a little bit heterogeneous. But yes, something like that. Individually, the BRICS, although the BRICS as an entity is not really coherent. But specifically now, the news is this. Saudi Arabia, of course, is a huge target of this. Ultimately, you might say Saudi Arabia is the main target after Egypt.
They had to get Egypt out of the way to go into Libya to bring the weapons in. You said months ago Mubarak wasn't playing ball on that. Then Saudi Arabia, then Iran. It's the whole deal.
Right. Now, here's what we've got, is an attempt by the Saudis to defend themselves, to maintain their national independence and to stop this tremendous CIA intervention and National Endowment for Democracy intervention into their internal affairs. At the end of March, we have Prince Bandar, the head of the National Security Council, and as far as I can see, the dominant personality of the whole regime of the royal family, going to Pakistan and meeting with the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Gilani, but I'm sure also with the Pakistani army and the ISI. And the Washington Post has had a couple of freak-out articles about this, one by Martin Indyk, the former U.S. ambassador to Israel. This is a guy who, remember, is an Australian, nationalized here, very, very strange guy. The idea is that Prince Bandar has arranged that if the U.S. starts a color revolution inside the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, the Pakistanis will send a division or more of troops to put it down. There is a tradition for this in the 1970s, 1980s at various times. The Saudis kept a division of Pakistani troops inside Saudi Arabia for security, to put down any eventual rebellions. And those were the people, I think, that went into the holy places during the Hajj in 1978-79, when there were some violent incidents there. But you can see the idea that Bandar is turning to an alliance with Pakistan in order to defend Saudi Arabia against the U.S. is a kind of strategic revolution. Up to now, Saudi Arabia has relied on the United States for security. But now, the people around Bandar see, obviously, that Obama is the main threat, that the U.S. regime, the CIA, the NED, are the main threat to the internal security of Saudi Arabia. So they're looking for an option. Now, once you say Pakistan, of course, you're also saying nuclear weapons. You can say in a certain way, it's quite possible that Bandar has arranged that Saudi Arabia is now under the Pakistani nuclear umbrella. This is quite a new thing in world affairs. These are two countries, Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, who have been under the U.S. yoke totally dominated by the U.S., bombed in the case of Pakistan, who are trying to make a jailbreak.
And because of globalist treachery, they were fully under the Anglo-American system, but because of the attempted overthrows and assassinations of Benazir Bhutto and others, and I've had the former head of Pakistani intelligence on confirming this, Hamid Ghul, folks, doesn't get any more high-powered out of Pakistan. He concurs with what Dr. Tarpley is saying. They now know they've been double-crossed. The Saudis, and again, you said this last year. I'm blown away, Tarpley, by your foresight. They now admit they're being double-crossed. Same thing 6 months ago said by our oil company connections through Lindsey Williams. And so the globalists were attempting, through the RAND Corporation Brzezinski model, for a global destabilization from North Africa, Middle East, into Central Asia as a pretext to move giant forces in to then menace China and Russia. I mean, this is an incredibly bold move.
Actually, the first attempt of Bandar, the first thing that at least I learned about, was in July of 2009. I was on your program to call attention to the fact that Bandar was playing the Russian card. He had made numerous visits to Russia. He had been meeting with Putin. They were talking about Russian military assistance also there for Saudi Arabia. So that goes back almost 2 years, and in reality more, most likely. Since then, there was a period of about a year when Bandar disappeared from view, and we weren't exactly sure what had happened to him. But now the word in various publications is Bandar is back. And I have to remind people, you may still have the idea that Bandar is this guy who's basically a slave of George Bush the Younger, Bandar Bush, close friend of the Bush family. This is ultimately all irrelevant.
He's a survivor, and now it's even in Reuters that the Saudis are saying they're being double-crossed. So he leaves house arrest. He's now back.
Right, and the house arrest, we have to see whether that was really house arrest or not. But the idea now is that if the U.S. starts this color revolution, that there will be Pakistani assistance. Now, you look at how the U.S. is attacking Saudi Arabia. One way is through Yemen. That entire thing in Yemen is basically a sideshow. The target of everything that happens in Yemen is Saudi Arabia. If you have the split up of Yemen, above all, the emergence of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, AQAP, led by Shiri, a Guantanamo six-year alumnus brought in by the United States to run it, and of course our dear friend Al-Laki, the CIA lackey, born in New Mexico, shipped over, obvious double agent. Those two guys, one from Guantanamo and one from the intelligence community, are running Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. So that's one source of a huge destabilization for Saudi Arabia.
And now that's even admitted in the LA Times and Washington Post. They're not even denying this brazenly. They think we're so done. They say bombs are humanitarian, ground troops are humanitarian, Al-Qaeda is bad when we say, good when we say, simultaneously. I mean, do you think they can really sell this to people?
Well, they're trying hard. I just wanted to mention the other angle is Bahrain. Now, Bahrain is this island, right? It's one of these little emirates along what amounts to the coast of Saudi Arabia, the Gulf Coast, the Persian Gulf, Arabian Gulf coast of Saudi Arabia. Now, there we have the Saudi troops have intervened in support of the Sunni royal family against the Shiite protesters. This is obviously intended not just, it's not really a destabilization of Bahrain because the Fifth Fleet base is there. There is an angle of putting pressure on the royal family because they don't want the base to be used for a war with Iran.
But Webster, I want to be clear. It's a soft underbelly. I want to be clear, and it's spread the contagion to Saudi Arabia. I can't stand the corrupt Saudis put in by British intel 100 plus years ago. I can't stand Gaddafi. The point is, why are the globalists moving against their allies, their old enemies? They now admit, it's all over the news, that they are destabilizing, and the Saudis respond by saying, we're going to slash oil production, and yes, we're 2 days after they met with Gates and tried to make a deal, the Secretary of Defense, they did run to Russia and China. And so this could be a big miscalculation by the Anglo-American globalist.
It could. The idea, I think, is that these countries are targeted not because of their internal regimes. And, of course, the Saudi internal regime is quite distasteful, to put it mildly. But the main issue is that they're attempting to rebel against Anglo-American domination. I think globalism is not exactly the right term. This is U.S.-British imperialism. That's all that ever was. Globalism implies that there's a place at the table for Russia or China and so forth, and there's not. Those countries are all targeted. They're all ultimately on the receiving end of color revolutions.
Well, Webster, we're going to skip this network break, so stations should carry this, and I don't want to get fighting going on here, but I really respect your foresight and your understanding, but it's admitted. Now, again, we read three mainstream news articles yesterday, L.A. Times, you name it, admitting that, okay, the West did orchestrate this in Egypt, in Libya, in Syria, the State Department admits. I mean, they're doing all of this. And then I get Lennon LaRouge on for the first time ever, and I think he's got a lot of interesting ideas and you know, was right about the Anglo-American system and almost 90 years old and you know, a very distinguished person. But when I brought it up to him that this was all a Western destabilization program, at the time it was admitted it was, he basically said it was a real revolution. Now, I understand that people have real reasons to be upset, and the globalists recognize that climate politically and then triggered it, but it's not debatable that they've triggered it. And off-air, you were mentioning that to me. Do you have any statements about it?
Well, certainly, the thing that LaRouche was saying was that this was all genuine and spontaneous, and I think that is absolutely wrong. The grievances are real. The potential was real, just as the potential under Metternich in Europe in 1848 was real. But the detonation and then the shaping, the leadership, the program, and the general direction of these things is totally provided by the CIA, MI6, and NED. I found it was interesting when you asked LaRouche that, he immediately dodged the question. He said, the only thing I can say about it is it's all totally spontaneous, and in 1782, the King of France made a mistake. Now, the 1782 King of France made the mistake actually leads to an argument that the French Revolution was actually a destabilization of France, provoked and promoted by the British.
But it was. Let me stop you. This has all been declassified by the British. If you read mainline history, you're a doctorate of it. But the general public doesn't know that. It's on record that the South had real grievances. They had them two decades before, or 2.5 decades earlier, with Andrew Jackson. They had real tariff issues. The slavery, was never an issue. That's just a modern fiction. But the British were in there openly manipulating the South and then stationing troops in Canada, threatening to invade. That's all mainline history. This is the grand stratagem, great game.
Right. And I was actually talking about the French Revolution, not so much the American Civil War. But
I mentioned the French, and then I shifted gears into
Yes, and of course the Confederate States of America was a project that was detonated and promoted by Lord Palmerston, Lord John Russell, British intelligence, and so forth. The other thing I think is interesting, looking at Bandar in particular, we have this interesting article by Martin Indyk in the Washington Post where he basically threatens the Saudis. He says the Saudi system is very fragile. And you better remember that, Saudis. You better remember that, Bondo. We're gonna come and get you. Support for this, in a certain way, comes from unexpected quarters. Jeff Steinberg, that you recently had on your program, has been following Bandar for 2 years. Back in July of 2009, when Bandar was playing the Russian card and beginning this attempt to free Saudi Arabia from total U.S. domination, this is precisely the moment that Steinberg chose to attack Bandar for various issues about scandals and 9/11 and so forth. Really, those pretexts meaning not very much, but mainly the idea attack Bandar. And now, precisely at the time when Bandar is preparing his trip to Pakistan, which really means an opening to China, we have Steinberg again attacking him in the pages of that magazine. In this case, it's an article that says the two worst guys in the Middle East are Bandar and Gaddafi. Now, isn't that interesting? This coincides precisely with the two main people that the U.S. and the British are concerned about in the region. So that's a very, very interesting pattern that we have there. But the general idea, I think, is clear. But if Bandar goes to Pakistan, this is a little bit like Nixon going to China, right? The way you go to China is sometimes through Pakistan. That's how Nixon did it 40 years ago. Maybe that's how Bandar is doing it in a certain sense. Once you're in an alliance with Pakistan, you're also then connected to Pakistan's ally, China. And I would assume that Bandar has kept up his connections to Putin and to Russia. Now, this gives us Russia, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and China. Now, that's a coherent alliance. That's a step beyond the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and certainly way beyond the BRICS. The BRICS that have just been meeting, that's an interesting group. But in terms of strategy, you've got the fact that India, sitting right in the middle, is essentially an ally of the U.S. against China. So they may agree economically, but strategically, I don't see how they will. If we have Russia, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and China, that could become something that would be strategic and military, but it could also become monetary and economic. That is an alliance with real world-shaping potential. And again, it's much stronger than these sort of things that we've seen so far.
Now, we are seeing press reports admitting that the West is involved in all this, but that it's not going well. How do you see this ending right now?
Well, let me just one other scenario is this guy Michael Scheuer from the CIA, of course, CIA veteran, was the Bin Laden desk. I've always called him the head of the Bin Laden fan club in Langley. He's on television saying that if the Saudis crack down in Bahrain and start killing Shiites, then the Iranians will invade Bahrain and essentially be at war with Saudi Arabia, and therefore the U.S. will have to intervene against
Iran. Yeah,
that's the
Brzezinski dream of the kamikaze event, playing them off against each other.
Right, but this, you see what he's doing. He's speaking very bluntly, but the whole idea of this is to scare Saudi Arabia back onto the plantation, right, back onto the U.S. Imperial ship. The thing in Libya that you've been mentioning, the news this morning is that British, French, and Italian advisors are going to be present on the ground in Libya with this Al-Qaeda infantry, right?
But they've always been there. Now they're beefing the force up.
Right. Precisely. But now they're going to be there openly. They've been there for 6 or 7 weeks since probably the middle of February and even earlier. So this looks like mission creep. Very interesting anniversary. We just had the 50th anniversary of the Bay of Pigs. And it's exactly parulle, except that when Alan Dulles and his crackpots of the CIA invaded Cuba in April of 1961, when the first phase failed, when the irregular forces failed to get an insurrection in Cuba, Kennedy was then asked by Alan Dulles, we need air support, we need actual invasion with Marines. And Kennedy said to him, no, I'm not giving you the air support, I'm not giving you the Marines, and by the way, you're fired. That was a real president.
Well, it came out even on Nightline, Frontline, that they fired him. He fired that whole group when they brought him northwards and said, let's stage terror attacks and blame it on Cuba to invade.
Right. A number of causes. But certainly within a year after the Bay of Pigs, Alan Dulles was out on his ear. Tremendous hatred in the CIA for Kennedy ever since. But what happens now, in this case, Libya's same example. You've got a secret army, in this case staffed by Al-Qaeda terrorists, that you've released from Guantanamo, and they failed to overwhelm Gaddafi. So now we have the second phase. What you never saw in the Bay of Pigs, you are seeing now. You are seeing the mission creep that happens when you don't have a real president, and the CIA comes back and says, look, our secret army is not working. We need boots on the ground. We need airstrikes. We need all this stuff. And Obama's going to give them.
And they're saying if as these troops try to march in with humanitarian weapons, if Gaddafi resists in any way, then there'll be an open invasion with the Marines waiting off the coast. How do you expect that to end? I mean, they're openly saying, Gaddafi, leave now or we're coming into Tripoli.
Well, that would be another war, and we've seen the Libyans have real guns with real bullets. You had Somalia, seemed like a very easy invasion.
He's also armed over 1 million of the citizens.
Yeah, that's actually very interesting. That's the Lin Piao People's War doctrine, and the interesting thing is you can't do that unless you are really popular. If you don't have a base, now it's largely a tribal base, but it's also a base based on economic performance. Remember, Libya was the poorest country in Africa. Now it's the richest. And that happened under Gaddafi. So that's quite a record. It's not all bad.
Yeah.
There's also this great man-made river, right? The biggest.
No, definitely they want to destabilize. Webster, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, will fight our country's battles for the bankers. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again very, very soon. Lord Christopher Monckton, straight ahead with key intel on the globalists trying to seize the world's energy infrastructures and how we're striking back.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Do you want to learn more about preparing for the hard times ahead? Have you ever thought about actually getting off the grid and becoming truly self-reliant? Introducing Off the Grid News, a weekly newsletter for independent Americans who want practical advice on how to survive and even prosper in an increasingly dangerous world. It's the best way to get a black belt in emergency preparedness, survival skills, and off-the-grid living. Packed with hard-hitting information on gardening, food preparation, alternative energy, and home security, there's simply nothing like it. And the best part, this $100 annual subscription is now free of charge. Simply sign up today and you'll also get our hard-hitting report, Food Shock, Why 2011 Could Be the Single Most Important Year in American History to Plant a Family Garden. It's absolutely free for listeners who sign up at offthegridnews.net. That's offthegridnews.net. Get your free Food Shock right now at offthegridnews.net.
America, you've been warned. For weeks, we've been warning you about a single event we believe will happen in the next 12 months that will shake the very foundations of our nation. We've told you about the video that details this shocking prediction. So far, over 6 million people have watched this free video online. Have you? Again, this big event has nothing to do with war or the stock market, yet it could change everything about your normal way of life. The way you shop, travel, invest, educate your children, and even how you take care of your health and your family. Could this really happen? Well, the man who created this video has been right about many predictions in his career. He was among the first to predict the collapse of GM, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and America's biggest mall owner, General Growth Properties. In fact, Barron's called his work a dire prophecy. If you haven't taken time to watch this free video, do it right now. You may never think about America the same way again. You can find the free video at endofamerica3.com. Again, that's www.endofamerica3.com. Watch the free video at endofamerica3.com. That's endofamerica3.com.
Do you suffer from adrenal fatigue? Did you know that mercury from your dental fillings can deposit into your kidneys and adrenals and cause them to lose up to 60% of their functional capacity? I've had firsthand experience with the damage mercury can do to the body. I've made it a life's work to figure out what went wrong after I got two large mercury fillings put into my teeth. I also know the most effective means by which the body can remove mercury. It has to do in large part with how well your liver functions and how much glutathione your cells produce. The number one superfood that supports optimal levels of glutathione is cold processed whey protein from grass-fed cows. One World Whey is unheated whey protein from grass-fed cows. It is the most bioactive, undenatured whey protein on the market. People are reporting health improvements from this one product that I've not seen in 20 years of clinical nutritional practice. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
We now take you live
to the Central Texas Command Center.
In the heart of the resistance, you're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
We are back live, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, the 20th day of April, 2011. And for a little bit into the next hour, Lord Christopher Monckton is going to be our guest. Then I'm going to get into the latest incredible economic news. It turns out the Associated Press is confirming the White House tried to get Standard & Poor's to not start to move towards delisting. The United States is a AAA rating. That means that our interest rates will go up on the debt and we'll basically become like Argentina or the Weimar Republic. That's coming up at the start of the next hour. I've also got this incredible confirmed news that police all over the country are being issued these wireless systems that download everything off your cell phones without warrants. And they're also demanding at checkpoints to grab your phone and plug them in and download everything off of it without warrants. I mean, this is total 1984, and the phones have been designed under federal law to have the back door for them to do it. So we're going to be breaking that down. Brent crude climbs above $122 on weak dollar. There's the Washington Post article, actually. AP also has it. Obama administration officials tried to keep S&P rating at stable, and they have the nerve to say upping budgets and raising the debt ceiling, that will stop a default, when S&P and every other major economic institution with common sense, it's not hard. It's like saying up is up, down is down, left is right, black is white. It's simple. We're saying up is up. They're saying up is down. It's amazing. And then meanwhile, they're saying no more debt will keep us from defaulting, when we're actually technically defaulting because they're now hyperinflating and monetizing over 70% of the T-bills. But that's coming up next hour. And then Steve Watson, writer for Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, joins us from London via video Skype as well to break down things like the royal wedding, and the Republicans aren't allowed to go out and protest, but everybody else is allowed to celebrate. We'll also get his view as a political scientist on what's happening with the situation in Libya and in the Middle East. But Lord Christopher Monckton, 3rd Viscount of Monckton and Brenchley, is the leading, there's no doubt, defender of science and reality when it comes to the fraud that is man-made global warming and the Kinley-Al Gore plan to tax all human activity. He's a British politician, public speaker, former newspaper editor, and hereditary peer, formerly a member of the Conservative Party. He now formerly also headed up the UK Independence Party. He served in the Conservative Central Office, also worked as one of the top advisors on science to Margaret Thatcher at Number 10 Policy Unit in the 1980s. He also worked for The Universe, The Sunday Telegraph Today, and The Evening Standard. His website is scienceandpublicpolicy.org or ukip.org. And here are the headlines today. We'll cover this first before we get into the latest on the social engineers trying to seize the energy sources of the world. UKIP launched their manifesto. Manifesto reveals intention for tough approach. And we're going to be breaking that down, of course. Nigel Farage of the UK Independence Party in the EU Parliament from England, also a frequent guest here and survived that plane crash. We're very thankful for that. Lord Monckton, thank you for joining us today from Scotland.
Alex, as always, it's a pleasure. I'm sitting here in Edinburgh in my apartment overlooking Edinburgh Castle. The sun is shining, the weather is good, and the politics are lousy.
For those that don't know who the UK Independence Party is in the U.S., it's basically similar to the Tea Party or the Ron Paul type folks that openly speak out against the global government, openly quote the scallywags on their plans, and openly fight them. And your party, not just in the U.K., but in Europe, similar groups are exploding and gaining ground. Tell us about this new D-Day invasion of the New World Order system.
Now is that in Britain, the United Kingdom Independence Party is very much on the march. We only were founded 17 years ago by an academic, and now suddenly we have grown into being the second biggest party in British politics in European Parliament elections. Of course, the European Parliament isn't a real parliament. It's not like your Congress. It can't make laws. It's just a kind of talking shop like the Duma of Tsar Nicholas II.
But it shows the will of the British people.
So the will of the British people, it does show the will, because we came second. We beat everybody except the Conservatives that time. And then in the recent by-election for the British Parliament, in the seat of Barnsley, where the former Labour member is now serving time in prison for having fiddled his expenses, we came second, beating the Conservative and Liberal parties who form the coalition government here, and coming second only to the Labour Party. And if you put up a donkey for the Labour Party in Barnsley, it's an old mining constituency, it's Arthur Scargill's headquarters, they'll always vote Labour there, but UKIP came second. Now we're fighting local government elections all round Britain. We have local government elections in England, we have Scottish Parliament elections in Scotland, and the Welsh Assembly elections in Wales. UKIP are contesting all three. I am leading the UKIP effort in Scotland, and in particular we're beginning to make some headway because the Scottish National Party, which effectively is communist, They are at present the ruling clique in the Scottish Parliament, and they came out with a manifesto earlier in the week in which they said that they were going to generate 100% of Scotland's electricity by so-called renewable means, which they mainly mean windmills, in just 9 years' time. And I found myself at a hustings just a few days ago opposite Rosanna Cunningham, who is the so-called environment, so-called minister for the so-called Scottish so-called government. And she knows nothing about the environment. Of course, most politicians don't. And she was saying, well, this is necessary to save the planet. And of course, it isn't. But I said, look, if you believe that, you'll believe that. If you really believe that in 9 years' time, you're going to have enough windmills doing their thing to generate all of Scotland's electricity, you only have to go back as far as last December, when we had no wind for an entire month. We had the second coldest winter in Britain since records began in 1659. That's what global warming means to us at the moment. It was very, very cold, and the percentage of UK and Scottish electricity contributed by all the wind farms that we have over that bitterly cold month, and we needed all the electricity we could get, was 0.0%.
Amazing. But to be clear, you are now standing for the Scottish Parliament. You are now running for office.
That's right. It's most unlikely that I'll succeed this time round. We're not the kind of politicians that pretend we're going to win when it's clear we're not. We're too new in Scotland to expect to storm the gates yet. And the press here are terrified of us. But here they are with the SNP, the ruling faction here, coming out with this mad, I mean, heroically lunatic policy of generating electricity with the wind. And at huge cost to taxpayers, of course. The only election that has, from the outset, opposed all these stupid wind bills is the United Kingdom Independence Party. And can we get ourselves onto a television program or into a newspaper? Virtually not at all. They will not let us anywhere near the media here. It's a closed shop. It's a little kind of Marxist cozy between the liberals and the socialists and the SNP. And which of them is more communist is not for me to say, but they're all pretty far to the left. And the media up here, exactly the same. They don't want the truth told. They don't want the voice of democracy to be heard. And I'll give you a little vignette which will really make you laugh, Alex. This was absolutely wonderful. When Nigel Farage, who's a regular guest on your show, came up very kindly to support me and do the launch in Edinburgh of UKIP's manifesto, one of the topics on that manifesto is that we want to give people the same right as they have in Switzerland, so that if the people think that the governing class is not representing them on a particular subject that the people that matters to the people, they can call a referendum if 1% of them sign a request saying we want a referendum.
A recall.
And then that referendum on any subject they like has to be held, and the result is binding on the Scottish Parliament, the Westminster Parliament, and, of course, the unelected dismal commissars of Europe. And that was our policy. Now, I was interviewed by a BBC reporter who, it was quite clear, was, again, from the Marxist wing of the BBC, which means about 99.9% of it. And I said to her, just a matter of interest, what did you think of the idea of letting the people decide what matters to them? And this was her reply. It's classic BBC. It's classic Marxism. And it really illustrates the problem that democracy now faces, really worldwide. She said, well, of course, you know, the thing about the people is that if you let them decide what matters, they will vote for trivialities, won't they? They'll vote for trivial things, things that don't matter. That was the absolute, instinctual, profound, deeply held contempt that the BBC and the person of this dopey little reporter had for the rights and freedoms and democracy of ordinary people. That's what we're up against, Alex. This governing class, which is sort of taking over and is gradually dismantling democracy everywhere as we speak. It's largely gone, as you know, in the UK. We've talked to this before.
Well, I want you to go.
Europe.
Sure, yeah. I want you to go over that, Lord Monckton, but first, digressing back, since you raise this, same thing here in the U.S. They create regional governments that are basically appointed by the federal bureaucracy, and then they tell the counties, the cities, the states what to do. And you've got Obama telling the EPA to shut down coal power plants and other plants and even hydroelectric dams with no law behind him. And then when states stand up against them, the feds will come in and even seize the facilities. But then, meanwhile, General Electric, who paid no taxes last year, they head up the President's Economic Council. Obama has given them waivers to open new plants and not upgrade their dirty coal plants. But everyone else, basically, the head of the Energy Department, has said they're going to start shutting down. I mean, people call them mindless environmentalists or well-meaning idiots. They're not idiots. They're gangsters. Creating oligopolies, creating monopolies, shutting down their competition. And it's the same thing in England where you have government-funded media, and then they won't let the UK Independence Party get on TV. But regardless, you guys run a couple times in every new area and then start winning as people hear your common sense being injected. So for those that don't know, describe how over 70% of UK laws are handed down from the EU, because this is something a lot of Americans don't understand.
That's a very good point, and it's actually 83%. It's five laws in six are handed down by the unelected commissars. That is the official German title for them, the commissars, that hated communist term for the people who ran the Soviet government. The commissars, the whole Soviet constitution has moved westward. 83% of Europe's laws, and that includes Britain's laws and Scotland's laws, are made by people that nobody elects. We can't hold them to account. We can't question them. We don't even know who they are. We can't remove them, and we can't replace them. These people are the enemies of freedom and democracy. They have their own agenda, which is not an agenda which you or I or the vast majority of good red-blooded Americans, Alex, would ever dream of going along with. And they make the laws, and shall I describe how they do it? Because it is a fascinating process. And it starts by them meeting in secret to decide. The commissars, this is just 27 of them, they meet in secret, behind closed doors, press not allowed in, nobody allowed to know what they're talking about, it's entirely secret. And then every 3 hours, day and night, 365 and a quarter days a year, they issue a new directive. That's what they call the law in Europe. Not a democratic bill or act, a directive.
And directive, as you know, is the root of dictator.
That's it. It is an instruction from our new masters on how we are to behave. And the so-called parliaments of the individual member states, like the Westminster Parliament and the Scottish Parliament, it is their duty to enact these directives into the law of the individual member states. And if they don't, then the government can be fined unlimited amounts of money by the commissars until they do comply. And so what happens is that the first stage of the law is this directive is proposed in secret. Then it is passed from the commissars to another secret committee, indeed a committee so secret that until just a few months ago, its very existence was not even mentioned on the European Union's own website. And this is the Committee of Permanent Representatives. By the very phrase permanent, you can tell that they're not elected, because election is not a permanent state. But they are appointed bureaucrats. Nobody knows who they are. They meet in secret to do what you in Congress would call a markup, which is the detailed consideration of the legislation, and we would call the committee stage. And that, again, we would do it in public, you do it in public, they do it in secret, and they are not elected to do it. Then it goes from them to, would you believe, a third body, also meeting in secret. This one is called the Council of Ministers. You think, ministers, perhaps they're elected. Yes, they are, but they don't sit on the Council of Ministers, well, not very often anyway. Normally, the Council of Ministers is, you've guessed it, another group of unelected bureaucrats meeting in secret to decide whether the law proposed by the commissars and worked on by this Committee of Permanent Representatives shall become the supreme law of Europe. And if they say no, that's the end of it. If they say yes, then and only then it is put in front of the only elected institution in Europe. This is the European Talking Shop, or it's called a parliament. That's a joke word for it, really. And the Talking Shop can express an opinion, but it cannot decide the legislation. It cannot either decide in favour or against. All it can do is express an opinion. If it says yes, then the legislation, even then, doesn't necessarily go through, because the commissars have been known to put forward kind of stalking horse legislation they don't want to go through. So then it goes through all these stages, wasting everybody's time. Then the commissars say, we want to show who's boss, and we're going to not let that legislation proceed. And so they can then overrule the European elected
And it goes on and on, but the reason this is important for people in North...
I must give you the next stage. The next stage.
Sure, go ahead.
One more stage. It then goes to the parliaments of the member states for debate. Well, of course, we don't get debate in our parliament on this. It goes to the Legislative Scrutiny Committee of the House of Commons. And you've guessed it. That's the only committee of the House of Commons that meets behind closed doors in secret. Now, if you read the Madison Papers, and you see how insistent they were that the Congress that they created with Article 1, Section 1 of your great Constitution of Liberty was to meet in public so that those who had elected the members of both houses of Congress, or of course it was one house originally, but now both houses of Congress, could see what it was that those whom they had elected were doing and saying on their behalf. Democracy doesn't work unless legislation is considered in public. But every stage of the legislation that is now imposed upon us from Europe is conducted in secret, and nearly every stage is conducted by people whom we do not elect. Whatever else this is, Alex, it is not democracy.
It's a dictatorship of the commissars. Stay there. I've got a key point to add, and then we'll talk about their latest agenda on the other side with Lord Monzo.
If you suffer from poor sleep, you need MyPillow. Guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. Using a patented fill, MyPillow adjusts to your exact individual needs by gently supporting your head, shoulders, and neck. MyPillow has a natural built-in cooling effect, keeping your cervical nerves cool, giving you the best sleep of your life. MyPillow will never go flat and relieves snoring, migraines, sleep apnea, fibromyalgia, and many other disorders. It's antimicrobial, non-allergenic, dust mite resistant, and best of all, machine washable and dryable. MyPillow is made in the USA, has an A rating with the Better Business Bureau, comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and an industry-leading 10-year warranty. Order today at MyPillow.com or call 952-442-6199. That's 952-442-6199. Mention coupon code GCN and receive 20% off your order. What do you have to lose except poor sleep? MyPillow.com, the most comfortable pillow you will ever own, guaranteed.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of Liquid Zeolite.
Concerned about nuclear contamination? You're not alone. If you understand the risk of today's food being contaminated from nuclear fallout, you would not only trust Wild Food for survival, you'd count on it. Wild Food is the most prolific, fastest-growing food available. It's fresh because it doesn't sit in the field for 8 to 10 weeks being fertilized or sprayed with pesticides, accumulating radiation. And Wild Food is not genetically altered. Ounce for ounce, Wild Food has more nutrition and less harmful elements than any animal or commercial agriculturally grown food. It can detoxify the body. And the best part? Wild Food is free for the taking. Let author Linda Runyon show you how to identify, harvest, prepare, eat, and store wild food. Go to ofthefield.com or call 888-51-EAT-FREE. That's 888-513-2837 or visit ofthefield.com. for your survival.
Okay, we're going to have Lord Monckton 5 minutes into the next hour with us, and I'm going to shift gears into all the other news. But the point I was starting to get to before the break is, why is what's happening in the EU so important to what's happening here? It is this same system of unelected bureaucracies, basically bought and paid for by private corrupt interests, that are usurping democratic forms of government all over the world. And we're entering into the same system here. They've already set up the SPP, North American Union, by stealth. Lord Monckton, studying these systems, is there not a continuity of agenda through the bureaucratic class?
Yes, there is. I mean, it's very clear that the European model, which is tyranny by Clark, as we call it, that's the model they're now going to try and spread worldwide. They've grown tired of democracy. They don't like voters coming along and saying, we don't like the arrangements you have made for us. We want another lot to take charge. They hate that. They hate being thrown out after they've had all the trappings and motor cars and red boxes and everybody calling them minister and secretary of state. They love all that. And they don't like it taken away. And they realize the way to make sure it never gets taken away again is simply to take democracy away. And so the European Union was set up right from the start with elaborate care to make sure that at no point did democracy get anywhere near the real decision-making. And so when it came to setting up the world government, which the UN would like to set up to save the planet from supposed climate change, they used EU advisors, and their fingers were all over the documents I read in Cancun last December at the latest round of this kind of rolling international conference they have. And it's quite clear that they've decided the way to go is the EU way, but without even bothering to have the fig leaf of an elected parliament. They're not even going to have it as a fig leaf. It's going to be openly anti-democratic. And they reckon they're going to get away with it. Well, I reckon they're not, because one of the things that's happening is that when I first began talking about world government, people said to me, oh, yes, you're another world government conspiracy theorist, pointy head, don't you have more sense than that? So the first person that said this to me was Kevin Libin, who was a journalist, a very distinguished journalist, actually, on the National Post in Canada, which is a very major newspaper. And I had been speaking to the Petroleum Club of Calgary about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and I said, this world government is coming, the treaty is already in draft. This was the draft Copenhagen treaty that eventually failed. But I said, it's quite clear that what they want is world government. He came up after and said, oh, world government, this is nonsense. This is just conspiracy theory. I said, I have three words for you, Kevin. He said, what? I said, read the treaty. So he said, you mean there is one? I said, do you think I'd just sit here and make stuff up? So I sent him a copy of it. And an hour later, he rang back. He said, this is 10 times worse than you ever told me. He said, it's really dreadful. I'm going to put it all over the front page of the National Post, which he did. And within a week, he was on secondment for 6 months to the Prime Minister of Canada to make absolutely sure that that law didn't get anywhere near Canada. They fought against it, and they kept it at bay. But, of course, in Britain, we've already lost our freedom. In America, if you go on the way you are, with the nation being, I think, willfully bankrupted by your political class. I mean bankrupted not just economically and morally, but I mean financially. They are driving you into complete bankruptcy, and they do this because a bankrupt system is a system in which the authoritarians, the people who don't like democracy, indeed the totalitarians, the people who want to rule from the center, regardless of what the voters want, they are the ones who will try to take power when the financial collapse finally comes. And you're quite right to sound regular warnings about the state of the finances in America, the rate at which the American government is borrowing, its failure to deal with the structural problems of overspending in the federal government, which have been made 20 times worse by Obama. He can no longer get away with saying it was all George Bush's fault. He has added 3 times as much debt as was there when George Bush left.
Absolutely, Lord Monckton. Got to break. 5 more minutes with you. We'll conclude on the other side.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.